Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. We're here every Saturday morning right here on Atlanta's Business Radio, Biz 1190. Great program today, but a bit unusual. Our guest today is Keith Getty. If you know anything at all about Christian music, you know about Keith and Kristen Getty. They're Irish singers, songwriters, and recording artists. And by the way, going to have a concert here in Atlanta on December the 19th at the Cobb Energy Center. Keith is best known, I suppose, best known for his song In Christ Alone, which he co-wrote with Stuart Townsend. And by the way, you can get tickets to that concert, that Christmas concert called The Joy of Christmas, at either GettyMusic.com or at Ticketmaster. Keith, welcome to Driven to Business.
Absolute honor to be here. Thank you so much.
Keith, you are often described by many people as a modern hymn writer. And every time I hear that, it always sort of tickles me a bit because of the way most people perceive hymns, the idea of a modern hymn writer actually sounds a little bit strange. So I guess as we would say here in Georgia, explain yourself.
Well, I think it was just we wanted to write hymns. It wasn't my idea, I don't think. We wanted to write hymns that helped teach the faith. God's people from the Old Testament to the New Testament to right through the history of the church have learned so much of their faith intellectually and emotionally through what they sing. And so we wanted to write hymns that taught the faith. And there's more Christians in the world today than ever before in history, but also the majority of Christians in the world today are first-generation Christians. And so we wanted to write hymns that help teach people the faith through what they sing, but also I think we wanted to write hymns that perhaps were songs that each generation could sing together, with the dream being that they were songs more in the folk and classical tradition that people could carry with them through life. So I guess that's much more connected to hymns than the modern praise and worship movement.
Keith, I first heard of you several years ago, and this probably speaks to how musically illiterate I am. I first heard of you several years ago when the new Southern Baptist hymnal was introduced.
Right.
And you had a hymn in there. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, you and Kristen were at an event I was there and actually performed the hymn In Christ Alone there. Tell us a little bit about your career and life journey from Belfast, Ireland, to not only having a hymn published in a United States Southern Baptist hymnal, but the many, many other successes that you and Kristen have had around the world.
Gosh, well, I really don't know how to answer that. We grew up in Ireland, and I was brought up in a Christian home. Then I went to England and really struggled both with people of other religions and people of no religion on faith totally. But over a period of time was helped to really get convinced that this Jesus Christ is talked about in the Gospels. First of all, the Gospels were reliable, but this Jesus Christ that was prophesied and born and taught and lived and died and rose was actually the person we have to put our trust in. But to actually really be able to articulate that in this generation and in the coming generations of our children's, that we're going to have to really understand our faith well and understand it in many ways. So I think that was just a conviction. I wrote In Christ Alone on the back of the back of a Northern Ireland electricity bill in a converted pigsty next door to my house. And so I was just sitting writing the one day, and then that song moved from there. And so that really was the start of the journey.
I'm assuming you grew, I don't know when you got started in music, but I'm assuming you were a musician from an early age, just hearing you play and write music. I'm assuming you started that at a very early age. Is that correct?
But Tim, my mom was a piano teacher and my dad was an organist and I was stubborn. So I certainly didn't want to do what they wanted me to do. So I wanted to be a sports guy. But I really was pretty average at sport. And so that kind of made the decision for me.
You know, you now live, as most folks may not know, you now live in Nashville, Tennessee, which, of course, is here in the South, is famous as the home of the Grand Ole Opry. Although I have to say, you haven't completely learned the language just yet, I don't think.
I'm trying to practice, but you know, it's a funny thing because Irish music, when we moved to Nashville, we still live in Ireland. We still go back to Ireland every summer. We haven't quite cut the umbilical cord yet, but when we went to Nashville with our Irish music, we got to know many of the bluegrass guys. And so part of the reason we've ended up you know, guest artists at the Opry is because of this wonderful connection between the Irish and the bluegrass and what the southern states like Georgia and Tennessee and Kentucky have in their music is actually so close to the Irish. And it's actually inspired the current concert tour we're doing and also the Christmas tour, which kind of moves from the old world to the new world in this musical style. So,
you know, I enjoy bluegrass music a great deal. In fact, I was always told that its roots were Scottish and Irish music. But and anybody that comes, as you just alluded to it, anyone that comes to a Keith and Kristen Getty concert really does hear that flavor very clearly in there. And I'm not enough of a musician. I play a bit of guitar, but I'm not enough of a musician to know exactly how you weave those things in. But it's a fascinating sound, and also it's a very high energy sound.
Yeah, it's great.
And you know the bluegrassers talk about if you talk to old bluegrass guys, they will talk about what they call a high lonesome sound, and you know, it's sort of a haunting type melody, and you guys actually sort of capture that in your music.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. We've been very privileged to be. They say in life, if you can surround yourself by enough intelligent people, you can fool anybody. And with our band, with this tour, we bring three Irish players and three bluegrass players plus our own drums and bass. So there's actually 10 of us on stage, and it is pretty high energy, and there's so many parallels. So one of the Irish and one of the bluegrass kids are both dancers. You know, one of each is both a fiddler, you know, and this kind of stuff. So there's one of each is a guitar player, but one plays kind of this fast flamenco Celtic guitar playing, another one plays a slide guitar and a banjo. You know, so it is just so much fun getting to make music with these guys. And I think there's both a high energy and there's a pathos, you know. So you get the sense of celebratory, but you also have time to you know, express lament or silence or other things as well. It's highly passionate. Now, inside the band, there's an argument. The bluegrass ones kind of feel they perfected the musical style, whereas we tend to think of Irish music as paradise and the southern states as the fall, you know. So, you pick what you think's right.
You know, one of the things that when you and your band came to our church some time ago was that one of the things that your guys did was they went out in the lobby after a very long and excellent, very high energy concert. They went out in the lobby and sort of just sat around a circle. Several of them did, and just did an impromptu acoustic jam session of sorts. It was absolutely fabulous. I was very impressed with the fact that those guys would do that.
They're a great bunch. They love life. They love the Lord. They love music. They're just great people. And in the Cobb Energy Center, they've actually planned this what they call Old World New World Carol Jam. So they're going to go out into the lobby, and they're actually going to be playing a bunch of Irish and bluegrass tunes mixed with carols. And I'm going to be inviting kids if they're there to come and dance and all this kind of stuff, and it's going to be just great.
Keith, you and Kristen are a family, of course, and yet you work and tour together. Now, I have a business. It's a family business. We don't tour like you guys do, and we don't stand up in front of thousands of people like you guys do. But I've interviewed a lot of other folks running family businesses about the joys of it and also probably, to be honest, some of the possible landmines that can be stepped on in that arena. I'm not asking you to air any of your dirty laundry here, but I'm sure that as a family touring like you do, that does present some challenges.
Oh, no, my wife always agrees with everything I say.
I don't think that's true.
We're both firstborn artists, so I think that makes us, according to a recent statistic, that makes us 98% incompatible. No, it's fun. You're right. It's a privilege. You know, I have many friends who are more gifted than I am, and have the burden of traveling away from their family a lot of the time. So every morning I wake up on a tour bus. We only tour 12 weeks a year. We do three tours, 4 weeks each in the spring, fall, and Christmas. And so we're home 40 weeks a year. So we start with the basis of being home 40 weeks a year, and that restricts our professional opportunities. But to us, that's a sacrifice worth making because family is more important. But the second thing is, I do be thankful to God every morning when I wake up on the tour. Even this morning when I woke up on the tour bus, and one of my daughters was crying, and the other one wanted breakfast, and really they could have spent another hour getting rest. for their weary souls before having to get up. But it's still a joy that we get up and we get to be at the front of the tour bus, the four of us in the morning, and it's good. And my wife and I are actually 124 months married, and we have never had a night apart. So we've kind of made a lot of we've created a lot of rules, a few little rods for our back, just to be together and to keep things close. But it is an art. I mean, it is an art. Like in marriage, I think the struggles with working together and being married are no different to any other marriage. There's just at times the intensity and the pressure is turned up a little, you know. So when there's a disagreement on something, or when one of us is too harsh, or one of us forgets something, there's just a little bit more pressure running around, just a little bit more people running around. Maybe the collateral damage is a little bit more, but I think I still think it's not that much different than another marriage. And also Kristen and I made music together, and before we ever dated. So we were making music long before she realized just what an attractive person I was.
That's very good. Our engineer Isaac over here is a newlywed, and I was trying to get him to take notes while you were talking there.
Hey, Isaac, how are you getting on so far?
But he didn't do it. So. Hey, Keith, you know, I think I've had the privilege of working with not only my wife, but also at least two of our adult children, which you may end up with the same thing one day. And, you know, the thing I have to be careful about is, since we have other people in the company, which is the same as it is with you, I suppose, is that we can't ever let anything we're doing become negative for anybody else around us. You know, because it's very embarrassing to be standing there with any, you know, if you've ever been in this position, I'm sure you have, to be standing next to a couple that's having an argument. It's very, very embarrassing. And in a business, you can't go to separate corners, sort of, where at home you can kind of, somebody can go in the basement and calm down, you know, but
right.
you don't get
that's
to
right.
do that when you're around a bunch. And it's, I would think it's the same way with you when you're around a bunch of other musicians there. We're talking with Keith Getty. Again, let me emphasize, Keith will be here. Keith and Kristen Getty will be here with their Joy of Christmas concert on December the 19th at the Cobb Energy Center. You can find tickets for that on gettymusic.com or Ticketmaster. If you've never heard them perform, you really should do that. It's an amazing performance. Keith, more to come after the break. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're streaming live on biz1190.com. Back in just a moment. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're talking with Keith Getty, Irish songwriter, performer, who, along with his wife, Kristen, will be here December the 19th at the Cobb Energy Center, and you can check that out on Ticketmaster and on Getty Music. Keith, we were talking before the break about the joys and possible problems, perhaps, of working as a family. I think both of us have agreed that the joys of it outweigh any of the downsides.
And I think we both agree that it'll be a lot easier if our wives just obeyed us all the time without any questions.
I'll just let you get away with saying that, because mine will probably listen to the program. So I'm like, I'll say a word here.
I'm hoping mine isn't. Don't be sending this to her.
Gotcha. Hey, let's dig a little bit into I mentioned to you during the break, I had read a Christian Post headline. It was from a few years ago, and the headline said, Keith Getty criticizes contemporary worship music. Well, it caught my eye, so I went and read the article. And the article really is, as is often the case with the news things, that the headline is a little more draconian than what you actually said. But talk to us a little bit about modern church worship music from your perspective.
Yeah, well, journalists are just trying to sell papers some of the time. It's really none of my business, modern church music. My business is writing hymns for the church. What I try to do with those songs is I try to write songs that teach about the whole character of the God of the Bible. So in the Psalms, if you take the book of the Psalms, we have a God who loves our praises and is a God of love and peace and compassion and all those wonderful things and leads us like a shepherd. But we also have a God who is a God of wrath, a God who is a jealous God, a God who is omnipresent, a God who is omniscient, a God who is angry, who hates sin, who one day will judge each one of us. And to understand the God of the Bible in his completeness and to understand him authentically and truthfully, we have to see the whole picture. So both, it's important to see the whole picture, the breadth of the whole picture, but also then see the depth of it as well. And most of the Psalms, I think the average length of a Psalm is about 16 to 18 verses as opposed to 4 verses average length of a hymn. So the Psalms go into much more detail and depth. So those things were huge for us in trying to do that. And if, even if we look at the history of church music, Martin Luther famously talked about the reformation of the church through the preaching and the singing of the word, because that was the two ways that God's people would learn. They don't learn through preaching and then get emotional through singing. They learn through both. And the second thing we've tried to do is we've tried to write songs that each generation can sing. So the hymns like In Christ Alone, you know, young people, old people can find it easy to sing together. They're not of a style. They're really essentially folk melodies or classical melodies that people can arrange some way. So they're not on the edge of what is contemporary, but they're songs that people can carry with them through life. And so that's the important thing about it. I think after that we just try and write as well as we can. I write an awful lot of tunes and I get very few, but occasionally Kristen and I or Stuart Townend manage to get one, and we just keep writing from there. But I'm not sure what else I can say.
You know, I'm at least I try to be a student of church music, or maybe it's just more correct to say that I have always enjoyed singing. I was raised singing very old hymns in a church, and you know, Isaac Watts, Fanny Crosby, and those kind of folks. Are those venerable? You know, sometimes you'll hear people say about modern music that it's not deep enough, I'm not talking about music that contains just terrible theological error, but music is just a little too light, or you know, is musically very repetitive.
I think we have to be careful, like preaching, and even more so because it's less deep. There's not much Christian music that has got theological error. In the same way as most preaching isn't saying something that's wrong.
Right.
It's the fact that it's not saying what's right, or not giving you the whole truth, or not giving you the right perspective. And I think that's where the problem is. I mean, how many of the songs we sing actually tell the whole gospel story? How many of them actually remind us of characteristics of God that aren't happy characteristics? And if everything we're singing is short and makes us feel happy, well, that's not what the Psalms are like, and that's
right.
Not what God is like, and that's not what life is like. So we have a situation which we now have where more people are leaving church when life goes wrong than are going to church when life goes wrong, which is a scandal. My grandparents' generation, when life went wrong or people got ill, you know, maybe people had children or there was a bereavement in the family, the rebels in the family came back to church. That was
right.
More of the pattern. Our generation is the opposite because people have no framework of how suffering or pain or injustice or death fit into Christian worship now, because it's all so happy, and has ignored the subjects of justice and pain and death.
That's a great observation, and I just sitting here thinking while you were saying that of like, and in particular my granddad's generation, who in the United States here lived during the Great Depression, when things were really very difficult for many of them here in the rural South, especially. And the hymns they sang back in those times actually reflected a lot of that, the fact that God was dependable even in bad times. God was dependable, and you could be sorrowful, but He was still God, and He loves us. That's an interesting observation. You have a great sense of humor, so I'm going to swap. Tactics on you here just a bit.
Go, I'm ready.
I have a good friend of mine who happens to be the head of a music department at a major college, and he's a Christian. He told me that we were one time talking about this, and he said the primary reason people sing in choirs is because it's fun, which is something interesting for a music professor to say. And furthermore, he said that when it stops being fun, people stop singing in them. Now, I've used that for many years to annoy my church choir directors, but I'm interested in your reaction to his statement.
Well, it's of course it's art, but all art is supposed to, it's supposed to exert, it's supposed to inspire our passions. That's what happens when we sing, when we look at a painting, when we watch a movie. And so, when I hear my friends say what we need is more theological songs, I kind of wince, because it's not what we need. We need great songs to sing that are full of great truth. Do you know what I mean? Because nobody wants more theology. You want great songs that happen to contain great theology. So people forget that, and people forget that we are fearfully and wonderfully made by a creator God. And so if we're made in His image, then we're creative too, and we need creative impulses. If I took my wife for her anniversary to a restaurant and said, "Hey, the food's edible," it wouldn't really inspire her very much. I think I'd be in a lot of trouble. I think you've been troubled with your wife too.
You're exactly right. That would work out. Actually, my wife's problem is keeping me from eating most places we go. That's usually what she spends most of her time doing, is getting me to back up a little bit. Hey, pulling back, and we may have to continue this after the break, but pulling back from theology just a second. You're a Christian, and you're a writer, and you're a performer. There is a bit of a business to that, and I'm assuming you did not grow up in that. So tell us a little bit about the business of a touring musical act. You've had a great deal of success in that area. Has there been anything in particular that has sort of surprised you since you got into that? Yeah, about a minute.
Yeah, no, I think for all of us, we love the Lord with all our heart, mind, soul, and strength. We love our neighbor as ourselves, and we have to do that wherever we are. We also have to be wise stewards of what we've got in life. And so I think you're always having to ask those questions. And if we're always asking those questions, I think that helps us. It's, you know, C.S. Lewis once said, "The immortal things are not the great symphonies, the great songs, the great pieces of architecture, and the great paintings and the great cities. They're going to die. The immortal thing is the person who sits beside you in the bus." So I know when I stand before God someday, He will be more concerned with how I treated my bass player and how I treated my sound guy than He will by the success my shows show. So those kind of things keep me kind of steady, and trying to really love the people I work with, people who come to the concerts, and then trying to be efficient with everything else as well and be generous.
Well, I think you know, I went to many years ago to a Steve Green concert, who I'm assuming you probably know Steve, but this was back when he was a pretty well-known person, but this particular concert promoter had just blown the deal. And there were only about 30 or 40 people in the audience. It was at a fairly large church. And I'm sure there was a tendency on his part to feel disappointed, but he came out there and gave us a fabulous performance, and I asked him later about that, and he said that he had decided early on that whenever he comes out, he's going to the people that are there, you know, it's not their fault someone else didn't show up. And I think that's that idea about caring about the people around you and the people that you're next to instead of yourself. You're listening to Driven to Business. More to come. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Stick around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. We're talking with singer and, well, I take that back. Keith's wife, Kristen, is a singer. I guess you sing, Keith, and composer Keith Getty. Do you sing at all, Keith?
I sing a little bit, but not very well.
You sound like me. I enjoy singing, but that doesn't mean I do it that well. It just means I do enjoy it. Keith, I've been to a Getty concert. I've been to a couple of them, actually. And on top of everything else, your concerts are a lot of fun. And so,
well, thanks very much.
You're coming here to Atlanta on December the 19th. Tell us, for someone that's not been to one of your concerts, what should they expect?
Well, my friend calls it the funnest hymn sing in the West. And what it is really, it's an evening where the Christmas concert where we celebrate the Christmas story, but we obviously we're hymn writers. So a lot of the evening is about singing old carols and singing some new carols and just enjoying the exhilaration of a room of strings and Irish musicians and massed choirs just singing at the top of our voices and really enjoying singing. But our band is a kind of an Irish-American band. So the Irish Christmas, the first half is music from the old world, and then the second half is more of the American influences. So we've got a wonderful band who does a lot of instrumental music. My wife sings some music. Sing some of her solos as well. So it's an evening with quite a lot of variety to it. And of course, with the Irish music, we have a lot of dance as well. So there's fairly high energy reels and jigs and fun spots as well, which kind of keep the evening humorous.
It's absolutely fabulous, and I don't just say that as because you're on a radio program. I'm a wannabe bluegrass musician, Keith. I sometimes say I'll go to a concert like that and I'll come home and want to burn my guitar because I'm so disappointed in my own playing.
How do you think I feel having to play with that band?
Yeah, but you're a pro. You sound pretty good up there.
No, I'm the worst. I'm the worst player in the band.
Hey, by the way, just while folks that are listening, give us the website. It's Getty. Give us a Getty website where they can go find ticket
info. GettyMusic.com. GettyMusic.com.
And by the way, also, you can find, it's GettyMusic.com, and you can find links to Keith and Kristen's website and the ticket information on EddieMayfield.com. So check it out there. Keith, at your December 19th concert here at the Cobb Energy Center, you also have Ricky Skaggs appearing with you. And Ricky about you, as you may know this, in his book, Kentucky Traveler. And you actually mentioned him on your website. Tell us about his appearance with you.
I didn't know him. I didn't know he mentioned me in Kentucky Traveler.
Yes, it's in there. It sure is. Yes.
Oh, for goodness sake! Really. That's really exciting. Now, Ricky Skaggs, in many ways, is the man I want to grow old like. In that he has given his life to his musical gift, and he has constantly tried to innovate as a bluegrass musician to create beautiful music that connects with people, and he's constantly tried to infuse his faith with his music. Now, obviously, it's a different style. He is a musical performer, whereas I'm a hymn writer. So my music primarily is about writing hymns that congregations can sing. And he obviously, as a bluegrass performer, plays on TV. He plays in country music shows. He plays in arenas. He plays in casinos. He plays in all these kind of different places. But everywhere he goes, he brings the gospel in the most straightforward, uncompromising way. He had two different points in his career. He had hits with songs called Simple Living.
Right.
And then he recorded a song of ours called Simple Living. And in a funny sense, he is the nearest thing I've seen to beautiful, simple, pure faith. You know, he takes the Lord at his word. He lives his life trying to honor the Lord with his music. He sees opportunities and gates and walks through them, and yet he's innovated. I mean, he's performed with the Bee Gees, written music with the Bee Gees. He's written music with the Chieftains. He's written music with Bruce Hornsby and just so many different musicians, and right across the country music scale, from being Dolly Parton's producer right through to headlining, to being a member of the Grand Ole Opry Hall of Fame, to being what's now considered the father of bluegrass. I think he's 14 Grammys, the most Grammys of any bluegrass male bluegrass musician in history.
You know, he has an interesting term that I sometimes use in my own business experience. You know, Ricky, I've heard him say, and I think you relate to this. He says that he doesn't advertise himself as a Christian artist. He advertises himself as an artist who happens to be a Christian. He does absolutely, in a pure and simple way, give a great testimony, as do you in your...
My gift really is writing hymns that large congregations can sing, that congregations, large or small, can sing. And so my gift is slightly more tailored to the church. But when it comes to our Christmas show, of course, everybody's at the show. So it's families, people who go to church, people who don't go to church. It's a time to celebrate Christmas, and I guess the uniqueness of our Christmas show, apart from being Irish and having this Irish American story, is that it is built around being a hymn writer. It's built around hymns and carols. It's not built around chestnuts roasting on an open fire. It's built around singing hymns and carols, but not all of them are deeply spiritual, and so there's lots of places that people can lock in and really get little clues and hints about why this story is so incredibly special.
Keith, tell us, as a hymn writer, and this may be an impossible question to answer, but why is it that why have some hymns endured for centuries? And I'm thinking about some Isaac Watts hymns, for instance. And since we're talking about Christmas, although I know it's not really written as a Christmas song, is how we sing it. Yeah. Isaac Watts is a joy to the world. Why do songs like that, in your opinion, endure through the centuries? What makes those special?
Well, I think it's like great art of any kind. What makes one painting outlast all the other paintings of a certain type of flower or about a woman's expression? Why is it one has stood out and the rest haven't? And I think there's a mystery to great art that none of us can understand, in the same way as art reflects personality. And there's a mystery to why someone's personality is just so engaging. There's pointers, like they may have humor or charm or good looks or intelligence. But it's really a unique thing. And so I think, obviously, we've got to remember that the great hymns, but more importantly, the great carols. The great carols were written by the greatest composers and poets in history. You know, the great carols were written by Mendelssohn and Holst and Beethoven and Handel and Bach. and then, of course, some of the finest traditional folk melodies of all time, combining that with the greatest hymn writers like Wesley and Watts, as you mentioned, and some of the greatest poets, Christina Rossetti, probably the finest poet of her generation, certainly one of my favorite female poets of all time. You know, in the bleak midwinter, frosty winds made moan, earth stood hard as iron, water like a stone. This stuff is, I mean, it's stunning, stunning imagery. And I mean, it's interesting that the modern Christian music movement that is so determined at times to throw out our tradition and then aim for what they call crossover music is actually throwing out the genuinely crossover music. Because, you know, when we say these carols are crossover, that doesn't mean like they get onto a late night television show once or get one song in the top 40 for one weekend and disappears and isn't heard of again. These are carols that inspired Dickens novels. These are carols that have been in 50 movies. These are carols that have been part of the education of maybe 10 generations of children. These are carols that have maybe been sung by 50 million choir singers over a period of 150 years. You know, so when we talk about these are the great carols are artistic powerhouses. Do you know what I mean? And so there is a point at which it really is our duty to honor it. What other field of art do you know of people would so dishonor the classic works of art? You know.
Exactly.
So I think we have an important role to really constantly be refreshing them and updating them, but to really enjoy them. You know.
Do you know what my? I know you don't because I haven't told you. Do you know what my favorite Keith Getty song is?
Which one?
It's By Faith, and the reason I like it is because I like to hear your wife say By Fifth.
It's a two syllable word. If you're out there on the radio, if you're out there listening, it's Fee-S. Practice it slowly. Can you get it there? Fee.
C.
Okay.
S.
Fee-S.
C-S. Fifth.
Now you've got it.
I'm getting it. That's right. Well, they tell me I have an Irish background, although I don't know that.
Well, you sound Irish. No, that's good. I like that fifth.
It is great to hear that. You've already mentioned earlier about the backup band that you guys do travel with. Tell us a little bit about them.
Right. Well, we got for the Christmas tour, we got three incredible Irish musicians. Well, there's my wife and I, and of course her best friend Deborah, the beautiful violinist.
Right, awesome.
And then we got bass and drums. So they travel with us all the time. And then for the Christmas tour, we have three Irish musicians. We have Shannon DeBara and Finan DeBara. Finan was the solo guitarist of Riverdance on Broadway for the whole run there. And then he and his wife have got a new band called Runa, R-U-N-A, which is a pure folk Irish folk band. And they are actually I've just been awarded Irish Band of the Year. So they're traveling on this tour. And then the third Irish player is called Patrick Darcy, who's playing everything from the Ilian pipes to the flutes to all that kind of stuff. And then we've got three bluegrassers as well. We got Maggie and Zach White. Maggie made her debut at the Grand Ole Opry when she was 11. She's a fiddle prodigy, a dancer. Shannon's also a dancer. A couple of them are dancers. And her husband, Zach, is an incredible singer and slide guitarist and banjo player. And then they're being joined with a number of shows by Jeff Taylor, who, as you know, plays for the Elvis Costello Band, and a number of others played in the last Paul Simon record. And so we're trying to fuse the styles. And of course, in the first half, they even break off into a little bit of flamenco and French Celtic music. In the second half, they break off into a little bit of Canadian folk music, and even a couple of numbers that hit the jazz as well. So it's a really wonderful show. I mean, they are a show in themselves. So we're just honored to have them beyond words.
I can attest that just as a wannabe sort of trying to be guitar player, that it's just unbelievable to watch them play, and you playing with them. It's just incredible, and it really is remarkable, uplifting, and just fun, high energy. You leave there just all feeling like you're so glad you came. I would encourage anybody to do that. I know, Keith, and I'll talk to you after the break about this, but I know that at both your Atlanta and your New York, at least, concert, you're also backed by a huge choir. Now, do you do that everywhere, or is that just those two places?
No, every city. We're huge believers in choirs. We're huge believers that congregational singing is better when you've got a choir that are passionate. Not a selfish choir, not a choir that are obsessed with themselves, not a bad choir, not a grumpy choir, not a choir that aren't engaged. But when you've got a passionate choir, congregational singing is better. So we're out to say that's something worth fighting for. And if you're a choir singer out there at all, you will enjoy either singing in the choir or you'll enjoy being part of it this evening, which is led by great choirs. And in Atlanta, we have one of the best ones with John Duncan, who claims his choir is indeed the best choir in the whole tour.
I do actually like. I don't sing in his choir. My wife sings in his choir, and it really is a remarkable choir. Keith, looking forward to talking to you some more here one more time. Keith is sitting on his front porch drinking coffee, he tells me, and has graciously agreed to talk to us for a few more minutes. Keep in mind, Keith will be here in Atlanta with their Christmas program on December 19th at the Cobb Energy Center. You can go to gettymusic.com or to eddiemayfield.com, and we will link you to tickets. You are listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. One more segment to come. Hang around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. We're talking with Keith Getty, hymn writer and Christian artist, and is coming, as I've mentioned several times, but I don't want you to not hear it, on December the 19th right here in Atlanta at the Cobb Energy Center. We were talking, Keith, about the fact that you've got a big choir. Now, just as a business guy, if I could ask you just for a moment about this. I have not promoted or been parts of anything like a Getty concert. I've never done anything that big, but I have helped to direct a few musical events here and there. And I look at that, at what you have going on down there, and I just think the logistics of getting all those people up and off that platform have got to be incredible. Do you do that, or do you farm that out to somebody?
I don't. Well, yes and no. I mean, it's all done. We've got a wonderful company, and I mean, honestly, I don't really know anything that's happening, but at the same time, it is under our auspices. So we've over the years had the privilege of just making a bunch of friends, and it's funny how relationships are the most valuable currency in life, aren't they? When you get good people around you, I mean, the team that actually produced this show, I think there's almost 45,000 tickets in sale for Irish Christmas, which makes it, I think, in terms of single artist Christmas, it was probably the biggest one in the country at the minute in the Christian scene, and you know. It's all run by a bunch of people, most of whom are in their 20s, who we work with. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
So it's just kids who have no experience in concerts, but just put it together because they're passionate and because they work hard and because they're diligent and because they really believe in what they're doing. So I honestly couldn't. I have such bad ADD that I couldn't get my way into Nashville without losing my directions twice. Do you know what I mean? Losing my way twice. But the team we have are really, really wonderful. So I'm grateful to Ashley and our whole team who put it together. Ashley lived in Atlanta for 4 years. Maybe that's what made her. Do you think that's what it was?
That could be it. I will tell you, I've dealt with her on the phone and email, and she is very, very nice. I will say that about her.
She is the producer of the entire tour, and she's 24 years old.
Wow.
So that's the level. We have a whole team of people like that who are just really wonderfully gifted, and there's so much more. I used to try to argue with them and tell them what to do, but then I realized that they were all cleverer than I was, so I kind of just stay out of it now.
Keith, who is, besides you, of course, who is your favorite hymn writer?
Our favorite hymn writer is, who is it today? It's Martin Luther. I'm speaking to you here. Reformation weekend's just passed us, and I was just thinking a lot about Martin Luther and the incredible vision he had for Christ and the gospel, but also of what it meant to be the church, and also what it meant that there is such a thing in this world as kingdoms of darkness and kingdoms of light. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And that we shouldn't be afraid. We don't need to be afraid. I mean, he had literally the political powers of Europe against him, the ecclesiological powers of Europe against him, and at many levels his broader family and friends against him. And more lies spread against him and death threats than possibly imaginable. Certainly more persecution than any of us will know. And yet he said there is such a thing as the kingdom of God, and it's worth fighting for. And you know, he wasn't an upstart. He tried to reform the church. He never tried to leave the church. They kicked him out. And so I find him. But he always said the Reformation would happen through the preaching and the singing of the word. It took them both together. And I fear that our generation believes to some degree in the preaching of the word and sees singing purely as an emotional edge or a marketing tool, and doesn't really appreciate that what we sing profoundly affects what, who we are and how we live.
I could not, just as a person enjoy singing, I could not agree with you more about that. There, I don't know what it is. I've never understood it completely about what singing does to the soul and an expression that and I like preaching too, but it's certainly different and complimentary, I think. Keith, of the hymns and the songs that you've written, is there one that you really like? And I'm not asking you to brag about it, but that you really like?
No. The one I always like is the most recent one. So the most recent hymn we wrote in this last tour was called "My Worth Is Not in What I Own," and we've put it in the homepage of our website. It's free for everybody to know. I just believe it's such an important song. It looks at human dignity. You know, it's people. You'll hear people say this is the most violent or corrupt age we've ever lived in, and I know what they mean. And there's a lot of bad things happening, but honestly, lots of other ages in history have seen violence and corruption at a pretty horrendous scale. But one thing that makes our age most so, if you ask a social anthropologist who's an atheist, what makes this age different? Take the Christianity out of it for a minute. They will say, this is the most narcissistic, self-obsessed age in history. There's never been an age in history where everything from who you marry to your loyalty to your family, to where you study, to what your job is, to how you go to church, to your ideas in church music, to everything reflects on what emotionally and therapeutically this does for me. You know, and it's so far from a community-based responsibility. It's so far from the idea that God is the center of the universe and we work around the outside of that. And so what it does is, ironically, it doesn't elevate people's view of themselves. It simply, it makes people hate themselves. It gives people depression. It gives people insecurity of every kind. And we wrote this song called "My Worth Is Not in What I Own, Not in This Strength of Flesh and Bone, But in the Costly Wounds of Love at the Cross." And it looks at what it means both to be created in God's image, but also to know Christ's saving work in the cross. And so, and seeing our identity in that. And I was remember the first few times we played it, I was hearing like high part of musicians who were, you know, studying at famous schools or had really big success, brought to tears because their worth was so much in their work. I met a girl who was going back to be a missionary to prostitutes in Chad, and she says, I'm translating this into the local dialect so these prostitutes can realize that they have value in life. So everyone from the greatest to the least in society need to learn what their identity is in Christ. So that song is really important at the minute.
You know, Keith, even in business, this, and most of our audience are business people, even in business, we caution people about, you know, do not allow. It's great to have success in business. You should work hard at it, do the best you can do. But you should never let that become your identity because I've seen so many people that will leave you. That doesn't last. And I think you said earlier, it's relationships that really matter. And most importantly, it's our relationship with Jesus through with God through Christ, and I think as Christians that you can't if you pull away from that you've lost it.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that for, and I'm going to swap gears just a little bit here for a little bit we have left right here, and this is going to be a very very simple question from a dumb guy, but tell us how much fun it is to perform with a fantastic band in front of thousands of people like you do.
It is just unbelievable. Well, it's especially fun for me because I'm the worst player in the band. I mean, this band is unbelievable. But it's also fun to share it with them because we all enjoy being with each other. You know, we all hang with each other. When we have a rehearsal week, we all hang out with each other. We all know each other's families. And so it really is a very happy atmosphere. And we're always trying to make it fresh. So I don't think we've ever done a show where we've gone out and gone, okay, we've got the thing sussed now. I'll see you at 6 o'clock and we all go off and watch movies for the day. You know, everybody hangs together. They're coming to you, and every single show we try to create something fresh for. So whether it's a show in Atlanta, or whether it's a show in New York, or whether it's a show in Nashville, or wherever it is, each show we're constantly trying some new little thing. Whether it's a drop in, whether it's trying to make a song better, or sometimes we'll even just try a different number. You know, so you see, every show we're trying to get that fresh thing.
You know, that comes across, as I've said several times, your programs are high energy and a lot of fun. It does come across that you guys are having a good time doing this, and I really think that has a lot to do. And you mentioned earlier about, in fact, I was going to take this back to, both of us know, you know my worship pastor at our church, Josh Sutton. I was going to take back your grumpy choir comment back to him and say, we've got to stop being such a grumpy choir.
Well, Josh is a very happy person.
Yes.
I'm sure his choir are less and less grumpy the longer they know him, for sure.
That's exactly right. In about 30 seconds, I actually think that your hymn "In Christ Alone" is going to be one of those songs that the church will be singing in 100 years. I know this is hard for an humble guy like you to perhaps answer, but do you agree with that?
Well, I'll not be there to know. So
that's the great thing.
We're thrilled that it's had a few really incredible awards, which we're very thankful for, and we're thankful that it's been used by people, and we're thankful. I think one of the things about it has been the first kind of global hymn of the 21st century, where it's I think it's the most popular hymn. It's the most popular song, religious song, in China. It's been the most popular hymn in Britain for 8 consecutive years, and it's the only 4-verse hymn in the top 100 in America. So it's found a unique place in society, and we're thankful for that. That's the guide. I think a lot of it is Stuart Tonin's lyric is just stunning. You know, I wrote a very simple melody which was quite catchy, but I had an idea for a song, but it was really Stuart's lyric.
Well, it really is a fabulous song, and you're a fabulous guest. Thank you so much, and a great sport. Thank you so much for coming on the program.
Thanks, Eddie. Great stuff.
All right, you've been listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.